copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Where we're going today is we want to do steps, you know, things you can do now. You know, I've always been pretty frustrated in my life by virtue of the fact that there are a lot of things that I don't understand, and I just say, just tell me what to do and I can do it. And that was always been a characteristic, I think, of my life, because if I didn't know how to do something, I would be pretty adamant about, you know, just show me how to do it and I can do it. So I'm going to try to do that today. Now, what we're going to begin with, I'm using these full slides so that you can see what's coming, and at the same time, you don't have to grab notes before it goes away and you don't see it again. So the first steps that we're going to be talking about is what it is that you need to do after we leave this particular session and we leave for the forum for the next year. Greg's going to be guiding you through the year-round mentoring program. I'll be involved in some of those sessions. But the first thing that Greg's going to be involved in is helping you to establish some kind of a baseline. We need to know where you're starting from before we know where you want to go. And so we have an audit that we created, and we'll continue to make it better. But basically, it just helps us to understand, well, here's where you are, and we want to know where it is you want to go, and we want to make sure that we have the opportunity of being able to help you work through the point of where you are to where you want to go in the context of the year-round mentoring program. Now, you've already heard me talk about the 8 primary areas of development. So development includes a lot of things. You know, most people think, you know, it's all about fundraising. And actually, as I've told you before, I've never really thought of myself as a fundraiser. And I really hate it when people introduce me as a fundraiser. You know, I'll look at them and they'll say, and what is your name, Mr. Twombly? And I says, Jerry Twombly. And he says, what do you do? I says, I work in development. He says, you mean you're a fundraiser? And then when people say fundraiser, then they kind of back up a little bit about 3 steps, because, and then you always see them putting their hand on their wallet because they want to make sure that they're not going to take, you're not going to take something from them that they don't really want to provide you. So, but fundraising is really a consequence, and keep remembering that, because it's a consequence, it's not a focus. Because if it's a focus, then you're going to be perceived in many instances as a manipulative person. You're basically using manipulation to get what it is that you want. And that's really not what we want to do. We want to grow relationships, and we know that the end result of a successful relationship is going to be impact. And so fundraising is important. And we need the resources that we require in order to be able to grow our organization. So fundraising is important. We want to recruit people. We want to recruit maybe clients. If you're a Christian school or a university, you want to recruit volunteers. You want to recruit a variety of people to come alongside to enable us to accomplish what it is that we feel called of God to do. So we want to recruitment. We want to recruit people. Then we want to retain them. We don't want to lose them, because the realities are, if we just, you know, get them, secure them, and then forget about them and we lose them, then the realities are we're not making forward momentum. And so we want to retain people. And one of the things that you should be tracking on a regular basis is your attrition percentage. In other words, how many people, you know, worked with you last year that didn't continue their relationship with you in the past? You want to track these kinds of things, because we want to know if we've lost sections of what it is that we really want to accomplish. Public relations. You know, we all know about public relations, and we want to communicate to various publics, because our organizations represent different groups of people, and we want to relate to them ways in which they can become involved and be a part of what it is that we are involved in. Database management. We didn't talk a lot about database management, and I can recommend to you any number of resources that if, in fact, you don't have a database that's working for you, then we can probably provide you some of the resources that might be available that will enable you to be able to track and to grow organizations strategically through your database. You should be able to get just a lot of information there, but you have to get information. You have to, first of all, place it in a place where you can get it and then basically draw from it for what it is that you need to do. Strategic planning, we've already talked about that, and Greg's going to be talking about it in great detail. He's going to really focus heavily on strategic planning in the next session. I did a session earlier this week. It was called, and some of you may have been attending that, Why Do Strategic Plans Fail? And we're talking about, well, what can you do to make sure that you don't have a failure? And so Greg's going to be talking to us about that. Organization, kind of really a big thing. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes. But organization is important. You know, most of us are maybe a one-person office. You know, your office is basically your computer, and you have conversations with your computer or whatever the case might be. But you really want to organize yourself so that basically you can get a lot of the things done that otherwise would never be done. The realities are you're a one-person job or a physician, you're a two-person office or whatever the case might be. But even one or two or three people is not enough in order to be able to do what it is that we feel called of God to do. So we've got to figure out, how do we leverage time? How do we leverage energy? How do we get these things done? And the organization is going to be the part of that. And we're going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later. And then outcomes. That's one of the most important words these days in the area of development. In other words, we want to make sure that our outcomes basically are in favor of what it is that we have said we were going to do. In other words, if we're going to do this, and if the outcomes are consistent, that's great. If they're not consistent, basically it's going to be an impactful in a negative way. All right, so let's go to the next slide. And now I'm going to talk about things you can do now. Okay, so you don't have to wait any longer. You can start doing some things right now. And that's going to be important for you. So the first thing that you can do now is to engage others in growing your ministry. And one of the ways that we do that is what I call the one-hour task force meeting. This is one of the most effective ministries, or one of the most effective programs that we have made available to our clients over the course of the years. A task force. Now, let me differentiate a task force from a committee. Some of you have been on committees. I don't like to be on a committee. Number one, I don't know when they end, because sometime you're in a committee and you think, am I ever going to be able to get this? I don't even know how I got there in the first place, and I don't know how to get off. And some of you probably can relate to that from your own experience. And so I remember one day I went to a person and I asked him if he'd be willing to serve as a committee, a member of our committee. And he looked at me and he was really quite angry, quite frankly. He says, Jerry, you don't have any clue how busy I am and all the things that I, he says, I am on a committee for committees. And then he went on to talk about all the other committees that he was on. He says, you know, I just can't do anything more. And I'm kind of listening to him. He was obviously agitated. He was really concerned and frustrated. And he says, you know, I just don't want to be on a committee. And I says, well, you know, I really understand that. I says, would you be willing to be a part of a task force? He says, of course. Notice the difference. A task force is something that basically there's a task to be done, and you want to get people to help you to get that task accomplished. Now, we have developed a program, you know, very successfully in various places around the world. We call it the one-hour task force meeting. And think of it this way. There are a lot of things in your organization that you don't know about. I mean, there's a lot of things about development that I'm just really continuing to understand. And usually I find a lot of people that basically know a whole lot more about this than I know it. And I really want to engage them and really get their input so that I can be better at what it is that I do. And so what typically I'll do is I'll say, hey, you know, could I meet with you? I'm not going to ask you for any money. It's not like I'm asking them for money. I would like to sit down with you and to pick your brain so that I might be able to be better at what it is that I do. Most people will do that and they'll be happy to do it. It's not that we're going to ask them to give us anything. We really want what it is that they have in terms of knowledge and understanding. And so, you know, you can do this in a coffee shop. You can do it at a restaurant. You can do it on the in the backyard of your car or your house or whatever the case might be. But sitting down, and what I do in a task force meeting is I just want to ask them questions. Can you help me understand? This is what it is that I'm dealing with. And I understand on the basis of what it is people have told me that you really know how to do this. Would you be willing to just kind of help me understand what it is that I need to know? And it's almost like agreement. You're giving them a compliment. You're recognizing the fact that they have value, that they really are important to you, and they are important to your ability to be able to do what it is that God's called you to do. So the one-hour task force meeting is just absolutely easy. You don't have to worry about it. It's not threatening. In fact, you're actually going to walk away and say, well, you know, that was one of the most informative, valuable sessions that I've ever been a part of. And basically that person generally oftentimes becomes a partner with you in some other practical ways as you grow your relationship with them. But the one-hour task force meeting, it's easy, it's non-threatening. You don't have to worry about it. Nobody's going to throw you out or get upset with you. But basically, you're gathering information, and while you're doing that, you're building relationships. Now, the second thing that you could do is what I call the draft proposal. Now, let me tell you a story. We started a certification program back in 1993, over 25 years ago. And the first session that I had, we created a certification program because the only certification program that was available in America at the time was an organization called the, what was it called, Greg? Do you remember? Anyway, it was another organization that was doing certification for nonprofit organizations. But they were, it wasn't a Christian organization, but it was still an organization of which I was a part, actually, when I was a vice president for the university of which I was a part. But anyway, we started this program, and we had about 20 people, 25 people that were in that first session. And one of them was a fellow by the name of Chuck Leslie. Chuck was, he was actually about 23 or 24 years old, but you know, you've seen people that are 23 and 24 and they look like they're 16. I mean, I don't think he had even shaved yet. And but he was smart, he was intelligent, and he was the new director of development for a Christian school in California. And he had really a big challenge. It was a significant organization that was really making a huge difference. And here he is, the new director of development, and he looks like he's 16 years old, despite the fact that he's 24, 25 years old. And so he was a part of our program. We were all kidding him. We used to call him the kid, you know. So the kid comes in, but everybody loved him. And well, a few months later, probably about a year later, he calls me on the phone one day, and he says, Jerry, he says, actually, I think I called him, and he said, yeah, I says, well, how are you doing? He says, well, we're doing good. He says, we're having a capital campaign. We're in the middle of a capital campaign or getting ready for one. They were going to go into a program to raise about $20 million. And I says, well, really? I says, how are you doing? He says, well, we haven't gone public yet. We're just kind of talking to people. And I said, well, how are you doing? He says, well, we've raised about, you know, $15 million so far, and we haven't even asked anybody for anything. Now, imagine that. I mean, don't you wish that would happen to you? Well, it was really kind of interesting what he had done. He realized that nobody was taking him seriously because he would look like a 16-year-old. And here you have these very high-profile community. But they were members of their children were involved in the Christian school there. And so Chuck did, he just basically said, can I talk to you? He says, I'm the new director of development of the Santa Fe Christian School. And I would just love to sit down and talk with you because I don't have a clue what it is that I'm doing or whatever. He was really just very, very allowing himself to really explain, you know, that he really did need and want the support of others. And so, but what he had done was he had written a 2 or 3 page program that basically talked about, here's where it is we're going. These are the steps that we're going to take. And then in the background, he used a watermark that said draft. And so he says, I've taken this to people. I've asked them, I says, you know, we're in the middle of something. I really would need your input because I'm working on this particular project. Well, most of these people were feeling bad for him because he's just this kid, you know, that really wants to get started. But they, and he's going in with his and saying, you know, I just need help. And so they're sitting down together, and he says, now this is what it is that I've written so far. And says, but I'd like you to take a look at it and evaluate it and assess it and determine whether or not what it is I should do or what I shouldn't do and so forth. And so he, you know, these people would go through it and they'd say, okay, well, I wouldn't do this or I wouldn't do that. And he was making these changes every single time that he had a presentation and making them better. And then at the end of it, it says, well, here are some ways that you can become involved in the organization. And they're looking at that too. And they're saying, well, these are, you know, great opportunities. And then he said, well, you know, this is, you know, can you give me more information that would be helpful? And they're helping them to do that. And the guy at the end of it says, his first meeting, the guy at the end of this says, you know, I'd like to be involved in this. I mean, it looks like you need $1 million lead gift. And he says, yeah, that's what we need. He said, well, I just want to do that. So on his first meeting, he gets $1 million contribution. And not because he asked for it. I mean, he was just asking for information. And he continued to do that to the point where they were almost at 16 or 17 million, and they had never done anything other than just to go to people, talk to them, seek their input. I mean, take a document that basically shares your vision and your mission and take it to people who have considerations of your organization, that they like what it is that you do, they know about what it is that you do. You know, share with them your vision, ask for their input, and thank them, you know, when it's over. But the realities are, if they never give you anything, you still have a relationship with somebody that's stronger than it was before. It's easy. It's not threatening. Basically, people are actually happy when you ask them for something that you otherwise, if you didn't ask them, you'd never get the information. But if you ask them what it is that, you know, I could do better, most of people are very, very willing to enjoy and participate in what it is that you're doing. So think about the draft proposal. It's very, very easy. I carry them around in a briefcase. Whenever I'm sitting with someone, you know, especially a client, I'll sit down with them. I says, let me talk about, or let me help you share with me that, you know, what it is that, let me share with you what it is that the organization is doing, but let me help me to understand what it is that's right or wrong or what could be better. And basically when you do that again, you're basically recognizing the value of that particular person and what it is that they could do. All right, the third thing that we can do is focus on critical groups. Now, a critical group, it's kind of self-defining, isn't it? But there are groups of people within your organization that you would perceive as being significant and critical to your success. So sit down on the things that you're looking about, you know, all the issues that you're grappling with. I mean, we had a wonderful meeting this morning. I had a wonderful meeting with Johanna in Switzerland this morning. And, you know, think of, you know, she's involved in a whole lot of different things, as you all are. We're all involved in all kinds of things, and we're trying to get this all done. But one of the things that I would do if I were in your situation, I would say, okay, in this particular area, what groups of people would you perceive are critical to your success if, in fact, you're going to be successful? And, you know, they're listening and they identify some people, and then we begin the process of maybe a task force meeting or something of that nature to introduce them to who it is we are, how they might be able to become involved and so forth. But there are critical groups, and oftentimes they're associated with the organization in one form or another, and you really want to get those people involved, identify who they are, get to know them by participating in something of a task force meeting or a draft proposal in an effort to try to get to know one another. And hopefully as people see what it is that you're doing, many of them will be anxious to be involved in some oftentimes very significant ways. All right. Consistently bridge everything. Now, we've already talked a little bit about bridging in other conversations that we've had early on. But don't forget that there are two wrong assumptions that we all make. Every person in this room today has made these mistakes. Everyone. You are not, you know, not, you're guilty just like everybody else, all right? And the first assumption that we make is that when you say something, everybody that you said it to understood perfectly what it is you just told them. Now, if you believe that, you've never had a teenager live in your house. I can just tell you that. Because, you know, I've told my kids, you know, when they were young, I said, okay, if you're done, you just never want to do this. And then all of a sudden they do something that was really stupid. And I'm saying, you know, I told you that you should never do this. And they said, really? I mean, really, Dad, I don't remember anything like that. I mean, despite the fact that I had told them several times that that probably wasn't a good thing to do. But people just don't understand oftentimes when you tell them something, what it is that they totally understand what it is you just told them. And most of them will not have understood totally what it is that you've just told them, despite the fact that you've done it and you've done it well. But even if they do, okay, let's just assume that they did understand what it is that, you know, you were telling them. It is very doubtful that they will expend the energy required to determine how they can be involved. In other words, you could say, okay, I understand that. And then let's say you're in a meeting and you and your wife are driving home after a meeting and you're saying, you know, that was really a great, that was just a great presentation that Jerry made. And you're thinking that my wife, let's say, was going to respond by saying, yeah, honey, that is really a great idea. I think we should do this. I'd like to, you know, create a 31-day prayer guide and put it on our refrigerator door. And her husband says, oh, yeah, that's really a good idea. And then he says, well, you know, I've got a good idea. He says, I know a lot of friends that basically know a lot of people, and I'd like to share with them what it is we're doing. So I think I'm going to get a bunch of my buddies. We're going to have breakfast someday, and I'd like to tell them what it is that's going on. She says, oh, that's really a great idea, honey. And then you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And if you think that's going to happen, the realities are you're living in another world. The realities are, it's not that they didn't have interest in what it is that you were doing, but if you don't give them the means wherein they can respond, they're not going to expend the energy to get it done because there's so many other things that are making demands upon them. And so what you need to do is you need to bridge opportunities. And what I mean by bridging opportunities is providing people, you know, sharing with them what it is that you're doing, making sure you have a card or a brochure, and take it. And I think I've already given you this illustration, but let's just assume that I'm the teacher of director or administrator of a Christian school, and we've just had a meeting. Okay. So you've all been a part of the meeting. It's really been an enjoyable meeting and we've had a great time. And so I stand up as the administrator of the organization. I say, hey, listen, thanks for being here. It's so good that you came. And we're so grateful that you are a part of what it is that we're doing. You've seen the testimonies of our kids today, and you've heard them stay and share their testimonies and what it is that God's doing in their lives and what it is that they want to do as they look to the future. You've seen the videos. You've seen parents stand up and tell their stories about what it is that God is doing. And we're so grateful for that. And some of you have never even heard about our organization in the past, but let me just share with you five or six ways that any one of us could be involved in what it is that, you know, God is doing through our ministry. And so here I've provided a card, and I'd like you to take that card, and I'd like to just share with you five or six ways you could be involved in our organization in growing the kingdom of God. So first of all, you could be one of our prayer partners. We have a 31-day prayer guide. We'd love to send it to you. If you want that, then just check that little card, and we'll make sure you get a 31-day prayer guide that you can put it on a magnet in your refrigerator and share it with others. And then, you know, here's some other things. You could be a very important person. And you could be a very important person if, in fact, you want to receive an email once a month that basically states, you know, certain things that are happening within the context of information. You're always going to be in the know of what's happening and the things that are happening within the organization. You'd like to be a volunteer. If you want to be a volunteer, just check that box. We'll give you the opportunities. You can do that. If you'd like to get our newsletter, you can get that. And there are all kinds of ways. And you might say at the end of it, you know, we also have financial needs, and if it's something that's of interest to you, then please let us know. And we'll make sure that you have the opportunity of learning about ways in which you can be involved financially if, in fact, that's something that you want to do. Well, if everyone checks that box, then the realities are, you know, they are accepting and understanding what you have done is you have bridged and you've moved them from not knowing anything to something that really is going to make a difference. So keep that in the back of your mind as we move forward, having to really race through this. The next thing I'd like you to consider is mind management software. Mind management software, I don't know how many of you are familiar with it. There's a mind manager company that basically is available. It's rather expensive, but it still is very, very valuable. I learned about mind management software in the earliest days of ELF, we were still in Sopron in Hungary, which was like almost 20 years ago. And I was taking notes, and I had a 3x5 card. And on my 3x5 card is all the things that I wanted to talk about. And so so after this meeting was over, one of the guys that was in the room, he came to me and he says, "Can I see that card of yours?" And I showed him my card. And he says, "You know, I can help you with this, because I think you could be a whole lot better if, in fact, you were a little bit better organized," or whatever the case was in that particular situation. But he introduced me to mind management software. And it's an incredible tool, and it's free, okay? Free. Everybody say free. I want to see frees out there, okay? Free. Okay, now you're going. This is really good. Okay, I just wanted to make sure you were awake. But it's free. It doesn't cost anything. And the website is www.xmind.net. And it's an incredible, it's called Mind Management Software, and it helps you to be organized. Here's one way in which I use it. I've written a few books, and every book has obviously a lot of chapters. And I write entire books. You know, I'll write a chapter on chapter one or whatever it says, and then, you know, chapter two and chapter three. And then all of a sudden I look at that and I say, you know, chapter three really needs to be chapter one. And so I can kind of drag it over here, and then, you know, I can add it, and it goes back. And it's really pretty amazing. And then at the end of the day, after it's all over, I just press a button and I got the completed book all in front of me. And but it's easier to do. I mean, you can do it in relationship to a need. Let's say you're going to do a certain event. And so you plan for that particular event. And you say, okay, in order for this event to be successful, this needs to be done. 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 And then you, down below it, you can put people that can be involved in all of that. It's an organizational wonder, and it's inexpensive. It doesn't cost you hardly anything. Now, the only time that you will have a cost associated with it is if you want to communicate it to somebody that doesn't have XMind, then you probably need to create a PDF that you can send it to somebody who does not own it. So if, in fact, that's the case, that might be really well here. Let me just make sure that I don't. I can't see anything other than my screen. So if I'm running right time, Greg, just stop, okay, to make sure that I'm on time and getting all of these things done. Okay, the next things that I want to talk to you
about. 10 minutes, Jerry.
Okay, great. The next thing that I want to talk to you about is the arms and legs of development. I mean, this is how we do development, right? We get involved in things. And what are the arms and legs of development? Well, there are four things. Projects. Now, think of a project as something that is short in duration. In other words, let's say you had a building and there was a tornado that came and took the roof off of your building. And now you don't have a roof, and yet you have a ministry that basically needs to be continue. So you're saying, okay, we need to have $30,000 to replace the roof. Now, we need to raise $30,000. And so we call that a project. We weren't expecting that to happen. We didn't expect that to, we didn't put it into our budget, you know, to change or to repair the roof, because the roof at that particular point was in pretty good situation. So a project is something that is short in term, usually about, you know, 2 or 3 months, perhaps. You say, okay, we're going to raise $30,000. We'd like to raise $10,000 a month, or whatever the case might be. You can put the numbers in. That's not the point. But the point is that, you know, it's short in duration. And the reason why I say, you know, you might want it to go for 3 weeks is because it gives people, you know, the opportunity to have amortizing that contribution over a 3-month period. So, yeah, I want to give, let's say, $150, you know, in support of this particular need. And so I'm going to give $50 a month for 3 months, and then other people are going to do the same thing. Projects are things that, you know, oftentimes organizations will do 2 or 3 projects a year, special projects to fund things that otherwise wouldn't be funded because we didn't have the budget to do it, yet we had the need to be able to do it. So projects are short term, very significant, very valuable. You should do at least one project each quarter, or each at least twice a year at the very least, and use it to basically accomplish something that otherwise probably would be accomplished because we didn't have the resources to do it otherwise. Okay, programs. Now, programs are something that happen on a annual basis. And we have giving programs. Now, a giving program, you might have someone, you know, we oftentimes divide donors into categories, you know, like you have smaller donors, medium-sized donors, and large donors or whatever. Usually we give them a number, you know, this is, or not a number, but a name. So we might have, this is our circle of friends for people who give, you know, less than a certain amount of money and so forth. And then you have maybe a Cornerstone 300 where you have larger donors and you're looking for 300 people who will participate financially. And that program goes on year after year after year after year. So those are programs that go on year after year that generate income. But there's another way, programs as well. Another program would be, in Christian schools, we have a lot of grandparents associations. Okay, the grandparents, you know, their children are in the school. Now we're trying to bring community together, which is really a developmental concept, bringing community together. And so we create a network or a program. And this particular program is that, you know, you can be a member of our grandparents association. How much does it cost? Doesn't cost anything. Just sign here. And here are ways in which grandparents can become involved in engaging them. So there's all kinds of programs that are available. Activities, thirdly, are things that we do annually. In other words, you may have a Christmas program. You may have things that happen throughout the year. These activities that happen, and you put them in the calendar every year. And these events are something that are very, very special. And these are just called activities. And we want to make sure that those activities, you know, oftentimes grow our organization strategically. And then the last one is events. Now, an event is something that doesn't happen very often, like a 25th anniversary. And so the 25th anniversary of your organization, I think every 5 years, you should have a celebration, quite frankly, because every time that you, the older you are, the more credible you are. And so you want to celebrate these anniversaries and these very, very important events because it enables people to understand, here's what it is we've done, and this is where we've come from, and this is where we're going. So keep that in the back of your mind as well. Build and support communities. Romans 12, chapter 12 and verse 6, and I didn't do the whole verse, but we have different gifts according to the grace given to us. And then there's a whole lot of other verses that talks about if you have the gift of knowledge, then do this. And if you do this, that, and the other thing, and so forth. But what we're really doing in development is we're trying to create communities. You know, God created us all imperfect. Did you know that? I'm sure you did. Then we all, you know, we don't all have the gifts that everybody else has. There's a very little that I know about a lot. In other words, there's a lot of things that I know that I just don't have a clue what it is that they're going. What you know, I just can't even relate to it. My in-laws are engineers, and they can do anything. They're irritatingly terrible. I mean, I love them, but I mean, and they're looking at me and saying, you know, Jerry, is there anything you can do? I mean, you can't, no, I can't do that. Do you want to? I said, no, not really. This is what I do. This is what, and you know, interestingly enough, honestly, I'm not the smartest pencil in the box by any stretch of the imagination, but there was one thing that I learned and I knew and I loved, and that was how to help people grow in their relationships so that they can grow the kingdom of God. And that's my total focus. Everything else to me is irrelevant to some degree, but this is where I want to focus. And that's a gift that, you know, God has given me. And I'm very grateful for it because I've had the opportunity of raising, well, almost $1 billion helping organizations grow organizations. And I never really intended to do that. I just really wanted to help a lot of people, you know, grow the kingdom of God. So you have a gift. And then we come together in community, and that's the beauty of development, is that we have all of these people coming together, all with different giftedness, all working towards the same purpose of growing a ministry for the glory of God. So discover what your gifts and focus and where you can thrive. I mean, I know that we all have gifts, and I think, you know, I have the gift of development. I mean, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I'm just making that up. But that's what it is that I do. And so I think you might want to consider that. So anyway, resources, this is all, these are books that I've written. If you want to see them, you can avail, they're all available on, I won't bore you with that. And consider year-round mentoring. And okay, how much time do I have now, Greg? I got one story I wanted to.
We've got like 4 minutes until we go to the breakout session.
Okay.
So you're in good shape.
This is my favorite story ever, okay? So I've got all stories because I just have been, I'm really old, okay? So I'm going to tell you my old story. About 12 or 15 years ago, I got a phone call from a buddy in North Raleigh, North Carolina, which is a city, a country, or a state in the United States. And he calls me on the phone. I says, and I kind of knew the guy. He says, Jerry, he says, we need to raise money for a capital campaign. I said, oh, really? That's really interesting. I says, tell me what's going on. He says, well, we're only about 2 years old. We started from nothing. We now have 600 students in our class, or in our Christian school. They're all in different churches all throughout North Raleigh. I mean, we have one, you know, class, you know, in this church and this church and this church. I mean, they're spread all over. And he says, we need to raise money to get a real campus. And I says, well, that's, yeah, that seems to be obvious. And so he says, I'm just wondering, I says, how much do you need? And he says, well, we need $7.5 million in order to get this done. I said, okay, well, that's interesting. And he says, can you help us? And I says, well, I'll try. And so we sent some of our team down there. We actually did what was called a feasibility study. Here's what it is. We think you're feasible. It's feasible for you. Okay. So you understand a lot of that process. So this feasibility study that we take place. And at the end of the feasibility study, I came to the board of directors and I said, they said, well, how much do you think we can raise, Jerry? And I says, I think you can raise probably about $5 million. I don't think you can raise 7.5, but I think you can raise 5. And then actually, I still remember the board chairman, and he said, well, we need 7.5. I said, I understand that. I says, but the reality is I think you have the capability of getting, you know, 5. And if you can't raise the rest, don't worry about it, because the realities are, you know, as things begin to develop, you know, everything will work out. Well, he was really rather agitated with it, but nonetheless, he was able to do that. And basically, about 6 months later, we raised $5 million. And so I'm feeling like seriously good, like, I knew that was going to happen. And so I didn't think too much about it. And about 6 months later, I got a phone call. I was actually at an airport in Atlanta, Georgia. I was getting ready to fly to Colorado Springs, where we were living at the time. And I'm sitting there eating some really bad Chinese food. And I get the phone, a phone call, and I pick up the phone, and he says, Jerry, he says, I have some interesting news that I think you'd be interested in. I says, well, yeah, tell me what's going on. And so here he tells me, he says, I had this meeting with a guy that is in our school. Nobody knew who he was. He just knew he had two children that were going to that Christian school. He says, I had this meeting this morning with him and his wife, and they came to a restaurant, and he says, well, what do you want to talk about? He says, well, I want to talk about the school project. And so my friend rolled out we rolled out, you know, the plans for the Christian school. And he's looking at all these plans, and he says, oh, man, this is great, this is great, this is great, this is great. And he says, how much is this going to cost? And my friend says, well, it's going to cost $7.5 million. And he says, well, where are you? He says, well, we've got $5 million so far. And he says, well, that's really encouraging. He says, tell me about the big project. Well, the big project was a $35 million project to really establish a Christian school. And so my friend was prepared, because we had done a lot of very significant work up to this. We put all of this out together, And he's saying, well, this is great. He says, there's going to be a building here, building here, building here. And he's explaining all of this. And I'm thinking, yeah, boy, that is just great. And he says, at the end of the conversation, he says, well, how much is this going to cost? And he says, well, it's going to cost us $35 million. He says, well, that's just awesome. I think we should do it. And he says, well, we're going to do it. And he showed them all the regions. We had three phases to get this done over $35 million. And so the bottom line is simply this. He says, I want to do this right now. I said, and my administrative friend says, you want to do what right now? He says, I want to give you a gift of $29,785,421.18. That was the remaining of what it is that was needed. And the realities are, what we showed them was, here's where we are, here's where we're going, and we had a plan. Now, you think that's a great story? It is a wonderful story. But you know the best of the story? The next day, he calls his friend, my friend, the administrator of the school. You know what he says? He says, you know, I just have to tell you that God gave me all that money back yesterday. And the administrator friend says, God gave you what back? He says, you know, the $29 million that you gave? He says, my portfolio literally the next day increased itself to the point that the $29 million that he'd given basically was actually washed away because of the gift of his support. It's a great story. I'd love to tell the story. And I've told it 1,000 times. Okay, thank you for being a part of all of this. So thank you for your commitment to the Lord, your commitment to ministry. I hope that this is a long and enduring relationship that goes until eternity, and then we'll have all eternity to celebrate, won't we? And what it is that God has done.